This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, did you super indulge on Super Bowl Sunday? Why going on a diet may not be the answer. But first, if you are a serious gardener who would like to dress up your yard or make better use of the space you have available, winter is the perfect time to do some research, take some classes, and put your landscape plans together so you're ready to start planting this spring. The Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden is offering two upcoming programs that will help you learn how to renovate your existing garden or create and install an entirely new, more sustainable landscape this year. And joining us for a preview of the zoo programs and to discuss creating a sustainable garden are Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director of Horticulture, Steve Foltz, and horticulturist Scott Berline, who's also the chair of the Taking Root campaign. And you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott and Steve, good to see both of you this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. It is a good time of year to be thinking ahead, isn't it? And getting some plans in place and getting some ideas and taking some classes.
Especially when you have these beautiful sunny days and it's warm and you can actually go out and survey your yard and, you know, really set a plan for your yard this year.
Yeah. How important is planning in terms of having a successful garden? I think, it seems to me like it's something people take for granted. Like, I can just do this and it'll work.
Right. To me, it's huge because you have limited resources and you really want to put those resources exactly where it'll do the most good and give you the most pleasure. And that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a home gardener who started out collecting, I can tell you planning will save you a lot of time, money, and effort. I've been in the fifth or sixth year of editing my garden at this point. So more plants literally coming out than going in.
Okay.
But yeah, planning is outstanding. You know, it's really the smart way to do it.
Yeah. What kind of things should people be considering as they're planning a garden? What should they be thinking about?
Well, I think, location would be the first thing. You know, what area do they want to dress up? And, the second thing is what's lacking in their yard? Is it shade? Is it, or if some people have all kinds of shade, but they don't know what to grow in the shade. So, to me, it's looking at those sites and saying, you know what? I look out my window every day at this spot. And why not take that spot and dress that spot up really well? Or, you know, your patio. You know, I like to live outside in the summer in my patio. So that's the one spot where I want all my cool plants, all the fun stuff. I've got a bay window and just having, you know, one annual that butterflies come to right outside that bay window. And I can sit in the comfort of my home and see butterflies every day.
What are some cool, you said cool plants. What are your cool plants, Steve?
Well, there's an annual called Verbena bonariensis. It's Brazilian verbena. It gets up about 3 foot tall, little purple lavender flower.
Ooh, that sounds pretty.
And I can guarantee you there will be zebra swallowtails and yellow, you know, they're just, butterflies love that plant.
Mm-hmm. Scott, what are things that you think people need to consider as they're making their plans? And what are some mistakes that people might make in that planning process?
I think a good assessment of your site is really important, too. It is knowing what you have. As far as maybe sun or shade, wet soil, dry soil, the quality of your soil, whether you can grow a wide variety of plants or maybe it's pretty heavy clay that you can struggle with. I think that's really the good start. That's the right start. And then you can get into other things like color combinations and, you know, the classic design ideas. But in the beginning, I think you should just keep it simple and be realistic with what your options are because of what your little piece of property is.
Well, that's true. When we talk about landscaping, that has different meanings to people.
Right.
It can be a big project, a small project.
Right. And like Scott said, assessment is key. One of the first things we do is have people take a piece of paper out and do their homework and, you know, draw what trees they have. And most of the time I hear, well, I don't know what tree I have. And so, yeah, they can bring in a sample of their leaves and their branches, and we'll tell them, you know, hey, this is a XX tree. And, you know, whether trees are, you know, on their way to a better quality tree for the next 50 years or, boy, that tree only has about 3 more years to live, maybe you should think about taking that one out and starting over. So that assessment of what you have, what you like, what you don't like, are there power lines, you know, overhead, you know, that you don't want to put a large tree under, you know, your power lines or things like that. So it's just, you know, the whole assessment. You know, some soils in this area are sandy, rich, beautiful, river bottom soils. Of course, my house is not.
Yeah, a lot of the neighborhoods are clay, a lot of clay soil going around.
And then deer, that's another consideration lately.
Yeah. So what do you do for deer, Steve?
Feed them.
Feed them? And then they don't bother your plants anymore.
I wish that were the case. I didn't think we got much deer, but boy, I couldn't grow vegetables this year. But there are certain plants that the deer love, and there's ones that they least likely will eat. So, you know, knowing that will help a lot, too.
Good time to be learning, too, though. The zoo has some classes that are coming up in the next few weeks.
I love this time of year for learning. You get the longer days, and your juices start flowing. And, you know, a day like today, all you want to do is just get out in the yard and start to garden. But, yeah, it's a great time. You know, professionally, all the symposiums and conferences are this time of year because it's the only time horticulturists really have any free time. But, yeah, we're having our Sustainable Urban Landscape Symposium on February 23rd. Mm-hmm. Real good lineup of speakers. Pretty much a focus on trees this year. Though we also have Rose Seeger, a local professional, does a lot of work with green roofs, talking about some of her work. And one I'm looking forward to is holistic care specialist from Children's Hospital is going to talk about how the rooftop gardens that they've put in at Children's Hospital are affecting patients and staff.
The therapeutic value.
The therapeutic value, yeah. Exactly. But on the tree side of it, we have Nancy Bewley coming in from Portland, Oregon, Boring, Oregon, I guess. And she is she's one of the top champions of trees in the country. Great speaker. So we're really looking forward to her coming and speaking twice. And then Dr. Tom Kimmerer, he's from formerly a professor at UK. He's with Venerable Trees, Inc. now. But he's been studying all the vestige venerable trees in the bluegrass region of Kentucky. These are 400, 500, 600-year-old trees potentially, and just different patches in the pasture lands there. And he's going to do a talk on the urban forest from a viewpoint that we don't often hear about, which is the leftover fragments of forest that are here and there, especially in a city like Cincinnati with the ravines and the hillsides that we have, and the value of that forest in creating a value economically, environmentally, and socially.
And when are the classes? They're for what, February, March? They're running all for both months?
Well, this is February 23rd for the symposium.
For the symposium.
But Steve is doing classes through...
Yeah, they start February 15th, and then they go the 15th and 22nd, then we skip March 1st, and then do three more. So it's five Wednesdays. And, the first one starts out with design, just what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, planning ahead.
Planning what kind of type of soil you have, what light do you have, do you have deer or not. And then the second one moves to trees and shrubs, you know, what types of trees and shrubs are recommended in Cincinnati. And then the third goes into more color spots, whether it's annuals or perennials, or are you putting in a pollinator garden, things like that. Anything that deals with that annuals and perennials category. And then we move on to the fourth one, which is how do you take care of all this? You know, what types of mulch do you use? Do you fertilize? When do you fertilize your lawn? How do you take care of your trees? And then the last one, we kind of put it all together and really talk about the holistic approach of gardening and how it relates to your yard, because we want you to get the most out of your garden, your yard, your landscape. And so we want you to have the success that we have, basically by hopefully not letting you make the mistakes that most gardeners do. You know, pretty flowers as you walk out, as you leave. oh, they look good, they're pretty, they're pink, I love them. You buy them, and then they don't do very well that year. Well, you know, that's why we have a list of the zoo's best in each category. The best annuals, the best perennials, the best trees, the best shrubs. So those lists and those brochures are what we'll be handing out to the guests and the people that take the class.
So, yes, Steve's classes are in the evenings, and those are
Seven to nine, right?
7 to 9 in the evenings, and those are aimed at homeowners. And the symposium is more of a professional type event, although serious gardeners would enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Tom Kimmer, I was at UK back in the, well, I won't say when, but it was when he first started. I darn near flunked out of his class. He's one smart guy. He's just a really treat. I think people that hear him are going to be just delighted. He's such a sharp guy. And Nancy Bewley, she works for the largest tree producer in the country, J. Frank Schmidt. I mean, they're the ones that are providing liners for all our local nurseries to grow on, and just a wealth of knowledge. This is going to be a great symposium and a great landscape series, so we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, now how do people get information about this? Zoo's website?
The zoo's website. Go to Gardens and then look for events and classes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have a link to that at WVXU.org as well. You know, you were talking earlier, Scott, about how the symposium is going to focus on trees.
Yes.
Do you recommend a certain size or age of a tree for planting in terms of something that will survive better and grow better?
It depends on what you want to do. If you're doing like a reforestation project, that's one thing. But for most people planting trees in their yards, you want to go in with good sizable material, a 2-inch caliper perhaps, whether it's a big a container like a 25-gallon or a B&B tree. That's up to you. But you want to go in with something large that can hopefully be defended against deer. And once it gets established, it's already making a presence even when it first goes in, and hopefully becomes a greater and greater presence rather quickly.
And when it comes to planting, Steve, planting a garden, is there software available for planting a garden, or is this just something you take a piece of grid paper and you go at it?
I personally take a piece of a napkin, you know, when you're having your chicken wings, and sit down and just start sketching. I've seen so many kind of canned, you know, you can learn design on this, but really it's creating your space. And there's nothing better than going to other people's gardens and seeing how they good gardeners put together their space. And it, you don't need to be a landscape architect or designer to really get the right space. Good gardeners do that well. So go to, you know, some of these local garden clubs have kind of walkthroughs throughout their city. And those are phenomenal places to go to learn, as well as the zoo. You know, coming to the zoo and botanical garden and seeing what types of trees.
You can get a lot of good ideas just by walking around the zoo and looking at what you have planted there.
Yeah. I mean, do you have something in bloom every month of the year? Right now we've got snowdrops in bloom and hamamelis and a couple other things. And but those are the fun. That's why gardeners are so happy people. Our spring starts a lot earlier than most everybody else's.
We will continue our conversation about sustainable gardening. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about the zoo's upcoming gardening classes and symposium on sustainable gardening with Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director of Horticulture, Steve Foltz, and horticulturist Scott Burline, who's also the chair of the Taking Root campaign. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Steve, when we talk about sustainable gardens, sustainable landscaping, what does that mean exactly?
Well, when you say sustainability, everyone's got their own
idea. Got a different idea, kind of exactly. Like landscaping, yeah.
Right. And to me, you know, you look on the hillsides, you see large trees, and you don't see grass, you don't see a whole lot of other things. You see trees. Then you go through these subdivisions and cities, and you don't see many trees. And to me, the very first thing about sustainability is getting large, long-lived trees in your community, whether that's your yard, your school, your park. You know, that's what's going to be here long after we're gone. So it's nice to talk about, you know, food gardens and things like that. But to me, you know, leaving a legacy of trees behind so the next generation will enjoy the shade and all the environmental ecosystem services that trees provide, that's number one. Now, there's 10 more, but that's number one.
That's the biggie right there.
Right.
Yeah. Scott, what about you? What does that mean to you?
Pretty much the same thing. And I'll approach it from just the other side of the coin in that, you know, what I think of as a sustainable plant is something that you can grow without a lot of input, that'll do well on its own, and contributes greatly to the ecosystem. And then that is exactly where trees come in, because they're the best at that. And then you can go to the other things, you know, the flowering plants for pollinators and other things that are good. But for our area, it's trees.
We had an email from a listener who says has a large shaded hosta garden and a partly sunny perennial garden, and it's too tough to keep up with. So her question is, any recommendations for low-maintenance gardens?
Well, first off, the more plants you can get in, the less soil you see, the better off you're going to be. So, you know, adding, you know, large, you know, to me, larger hosta that take up more space, you know, and shade the ground. You know, mulch to a gardener is kind of a negative. So, you know, just filling up those spaces. And maybe simplifying. Sometimes we make the mistake of just putting all our favorite things in, and when you look at it, well, then this one dies and that one over here dies. And it's always, you know, sometimes just getting the ones that really do well and then just kind of backing off a little bit. So I would suggest, you know, thinking about that space, simplifying, taking things that are difficult to keep, you know, out and putting in things that are more simple. But hostas are pretty simple if you don't have deer.
And the more the better, you're saying,
yeah,
in this case.
Yeah, bigger the better. You know, not the little tiny small ones, but maybe ones that get, you know, 18, 24, 30 inches tall.
I always like to say, you know, maybe you need to lower your standards, you know, accept that it's not going to be a perfect garden all the time and just enjoy it and maybe take the steps that make it easier to care for. My garden is way too big for my yard or for my time that I have available. So, you know, when it's time for fall cleanup, I just get the mower out and I mow my perennials. And if they don't make it, fine. I hardly ever notice. I mean, so many other plants, but I can't say that I've lost a single plant from just mowing it and being done with it rather than trying to head everything back, clean up, and so on and so forth. So maybe, you know, find that some different maintenance practices will help you out a little bit too.
Scott, you used the term editing earlier. You were talking about how you're always editing your garden plans. When should someone just take the plunge and just completely start all over again and renovate their garden or their landscaping?
Well, you know, I don't know that you ever have to completely renovate. I mean, maybe there's such gardens that are so bad that you need to do that. But, you know, the minute, you know, I see people all the time fretting over cutting out a plant that they don't like. It's like, you don't like it, get rid of it. Or that it's not doing well, what should I do with it? You know, get rid of it. Put something in that will do well. There's kind of this emotional attachment people put towards plants that doesn't need to be there. Except for the big trees, which are long-term big parts of your yard. Your perennials and things, if it's not working, move it. If it doesn't move, start again.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And Sue Ellen in Price Hill joins us now. Hi, Sue Ellen.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm interested in the trees that he just mentioned, the mature trees. I was driving up the hill to Price Hill this morning, and while the leaves are off these big trees, you can see mature trees up over the tops of the roofs that have ivy or euonymus just covering multiple branches. And in my view, that's detrimental to the tree because it's so heavy. But I just wondered what the taking roots people think about that and whether that should be, those vines should be severed at the bottom and allowed to die off.
I agree with you 100% that the best thing you can do for a tree is to cut that out. And Spring Grove went through this, maybe 10 years ago, they started removing euonymus and ivy from their trees. And basically, you just have to cut out a 2 or 3 foot blank space between the lower part of the vine and the upper part of the vine, and that will kill it. Now, it's amazing how slow it takes for euonymus and ivy to die that way and then to fall out of the tree. But it eventually does, and it's way better for the tree that way.
Scott, speaking of taking root, how's the campaign going?
Campaign's going rather well. We became independent with our own 501c3, and we have the Tree Summit actually coming up February 25th, which you can find at the Taking Root website. Find out about that and register. That will be held this year at the Boone County Extension Office.
Okay. And again, remind us, the whole point of taking root, you want people planting trees?
Planting trees.
Building up the canopy in this area? And
yes. It came out of the whole loss of ash trees because of emerald ash borer. And the whole point is to raise awareness of how much trees mean to our community and to our environment and for people, everyday people, to get more plants, more trees in the ground.
How big a problem is the emerald ash borer? I haven't heard a lot about it in the news lately, but is it still a problem out there?
It's pretty much killed off all of our trees, yeah. So it's not around much anymore.
It's
certain
moved
pockets
on
here and there. Yeah, but it's still moving throughout the country, and eventually, unless things change, and I don't really expect that, it will wipe out all the ash in the eastern half of the United States.
Again, 513-419-7100, and Rick joins us now. Hi, Rick.
How are you doing?
Good.
So I have a question. I have had a couple of perennial gardens in my yard, and I'm constantly fighting grass migrating in and choking out all of the perennial flowers. What can you give me some advice on that?
Well, I'd say at the very first, we generally edge the beds probably twice a year, once in the early spring and again in the fall. And that'll keep that clean line separating the turf from the perennial border. There's also, if you want to go about it in a chemical approach, there's also a chemical that will take out grasses but leave the other plants alone. So it's very grass specific. So that's another way of handling it. But most of the time, you just got to get out there and keep that clean edge there. And again, it depends on the type of grass too. Sometimes those southern grasses, Bermuda and Zoysia, will creep right in and it's almost impossible. So that is a common problem. And that's, we were talking about, when do you renovate? Sometimes grasses can just completely take over a perennial bed, and sometimes it's better just to go in and start
all over again.
Yeah.
Blow it up. Is your idea of more is better? Would that help with grasses creeping in if you've got more?
Yeah, because the idea is not having sunlight, in those spaces. Plant your plants thick enough that the competition will keep the weed seed from germinating and keep things out. But it's tough.
Catherine joins us. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Go right ahead with your question. You're welcome.
Yes. I have two sets of arborvitae borders. They're about 7-8 foot tall, and they have become overcome with bagworms. We tried for 2 years in a row the pheromone traps. And, sure enough, they caught lots and lots of the male hatchlings, but they still, the tops of the trees are starting to look bare. So I guess my question is there anything we can do at this point, or do we need to take them out? My main concern at this point is protecting the other evergreens in the area.
Well, on bagworm, that's something that you really need to control it chemically, whether it's with BT, which is more of a fungicide, safer for the environment. It's very specific to that. But your timing on a chemical control spray is critical on that. And I'd encourage you to look it up in the Ohio State or Kentucky Extension, and they have exact protocols and what to use for bagworm. And bagworm's very specific to several groups of evergreens. One of them is the arborvitae. And that's one of the things we sometimes suggest moving with the western arborvitae, Thuja placata, over the eastern arborvitae, because they are definitely more subject to the bagworm, the eastern arborvitae is. So, I would really consider doing a chemical application on those. And then just spotting. If you see it one or two on other things, you're probably okay. But, boy, you start seeing multiples on a plant, you really need to do an application.
Steve, again, give us the rundown of the classes.
February the 15th, every Wednesday for 5 weeks.
7 to 9 in the evening.
7 to 9 in the evening at the zoo at the Schott Center, the Frisch's Theater. And those are the questions that we handle all the time. And, you know, what kind of problems are people having?
Mm-hmm. And then the symposium, Scott?
February 23rd, okay. Thursday.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director of Horticulture, Steve Foltz, and horticulturist Scott Berline, who's also the chair of the Taking Root campaign. Coming up, why dieting may not be the best way to stay healthy. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.